Hello and welcome back to Parrot Radio. Sorry if I sound a bit stuffy. I've got a bit of a cold at the moment, but this is just for kind of the intro and the outro, the actual body. Should sound fine, I think, because it was a bit poor. But yeah, in this episode, I speak to a gentleman called Stephen Waring, who is the founder, kind of co-founder and creative director for a Manchester-based agency called Ensemble. And we discuss loads of things, as we normally do, including his early influences, you know, his time in education, the whole gambit, as I normally go through. Ensemble have got quite a experimental output, so we kind of discussed that. He also worked at another agency called Havas Links for a while, so we sort of discussed his time there. And we sort of discuss Ensemble's approach to work and sort of their steps that they go through after getting a brief to kind of get to the end outcome. So I hope you enjoy, and I'll let the podcast play. So yeah, I start these all the same, basically. For the people that don't have the pleasure of knowing yourself, can you give them a bit of a rundown as to who you are and what you do?
Yes, I'm Steve Waring. I am a graphic designer based in Manchester. I've been here about 20 years, and in about 2017, co-founded a design agency called Ensemble, a brand design and strategy agency.
So yeah, going back before all of that, can you sort of remember where your interest sort of originally came from for sort of the art and design space?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like an absolute cliche, but it's a bit of a weird. I always knew what I wanted to do. I've always been sort of quite single-minded with it. Mm. Classic thing of knowing how to draw. You know, stickmen is my limit, but always did the drawing logos, messing about with type, drawing letter forms and stuff like that, right the way back, you know, right the way. I mean, when you first got in touch, obviously you mentioned sort of wrestling and stuff and your sort of affiliation with wrestling. Maybe we'll touch on that a bit more, but, I vividly remember drawing sort of wrestling logos from sticker books and stuff like that. And that was always an interest. And it's always because I've been that single-minded in terms of like it's the only thing I've felt like I'm actually quite good at. And being quite single-minded with what I want to do, it's always tricky. You know, you always meet people and I've never struggled with, oh, I don't know what I want to do, or changing careers and things like that. It has always been sort of ingrained in me, that sort of visual side of it. I'm not particularly sort of academic by and things like that at school, but it was always sort of creative side, art and design and even drama and things like that to a certain degree that I always resonated towards. And you know, those earliest memories, you know, they're still sort of really stick with you. I've still got you know, those early sketchbooks and stuff, and I still as you get older and stuff like that, you look at mirror and you sort of end up increasingly more shocked at what you see, because you still feel sort of like 15, 16 or even earlier than that, you know.
Touching on the wrestling, I think it's something I've thought of recently, because I've been trying to work out why I'm interested in the things that I'm interested in terms of like a visual aspect. Yeah. And I think mine comes from sort of all the big logos, you know, the SummerSlam logos and your WrestleMania logos, but they're all a bit naff, aren't they, when you kind of... They're a bit like very glamorous, aren't they? But when you really sit and break them down, so the type is always a bit crap on them and things. It's always a bit weird.
Yeah, it's all that. I always loved it. That those like early 90s, you know, like the old WF logo, which is it feels like it could be on the front of a, you know, American truck or whatever it was. That big glassy, you know, shiny metal thing with all its drop shadows and all that. It still really resonates. All that, you know. Like the graphic design and wrestling is a thing in its own right. I mean, those early stuff, I think, I don't know what era necessarily you first started with it, but mine was like that 92, 93 time. And it was just visually really abundant. And, you know, it was these bright colors and like say type and each wrestler having their own logo and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a bit dulled down though. It's kind of a shame really, because you have like your... It's like the characters in a way. You've sort of had the really larger than life ones like your Hulk Hogan and your Randy Savage, and then they've all kind of died down a bit, but then the design's kind of gone the same way as well, where they've all just sort of got like a bit of type on the front of a t-shirt, whereas if you had like a Hulk Hogan one, it was like bright yellow and it was this massive thing, you know?
I agree, for sure. It was all comic book, wasn't it? But like you say, comic book, and the sort of visual side almost replicated that, which is obviously great when you're younger because you gravitate towards that. Yeah, like wrestling seems to have sort of matured with me a little bit, you know, obviously like the Attitude Era and going through that at 17, 8, 16, 17, 18 when you discover beer and all that, and then watching Raw on a Friday night that was definitely less PG and more moving to certain sort of like that laddish culture, I guess. I was, you know, yeah, gravitated. So, yeah.
Jumping back to where I was, so yeah, you studied in both Yorkshire and Manchester. Could you touch on sort of the differences between the two cities or sort of the culture around them?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this actually, and I think the wider thing is like it, my life and sort of career and stuff like that. Because I've been quite single-minded in what I've done, and my life, personal life, it is all sort of inherently linked a little bit, really. You know, yes, what we do is a job and stuff, but it's always felt, you know, a little bit more than that—a bit of a passion that you happen to get paid for, which is quite nice. You know, so even going back to when I was at York College, which was great. So I did a national diploma at York, a high national diploma at York, and then met a bunch of guys there that still mates to this day. You know, that I'm uncle to the kids and all that sort of thing. You know, three or four of us ended up just looking at Manchester and going, we're not ready to sort of get a job yet. We can stretch this out a little bit more, sort of thing, and started looking for courses. And Manchester was always one of those where you just sort of like, oh, that's cool. Leeds was always too close. You know, when we sort of knew Leeds, it was like Manchester, yeah, there's something happening there, you know, culturally, musically, and all that sort of thing at the time. So sort of three or four of us applied, and three of us got on the course over in Manchester. And it was, you know, you move away from the house, you move away from your sort of your home. We all moved in together. We all sort of worked together in, yeah, various jobs and stuff, studied together and stuff like that. And yeah, it wasn't night and day. And I don't know, culturally, it was just bigger and more. And you felt like something was happening in Manchester. And I don't want to go to the old tropes of, you know, the sort of music thing, but it was important. And visually and culturally, there was just so much happening, particularly in relation to York, where there was not a lot necessarily happening. But I think the wider thought of like doing it with your mates, and you know, this, which is why I've always stayed here. You know, I've always felt that all my family's from Leeds, on near Leeds, Castleford, and a lot of my friends still are. But I've always felt Manchester is my home now, sort of thing. And you know, you're only an hour away, but you've sort of, you know, further enough away to have your own, you know, it feels very different, but close to be just a you know, an hour down the road.
Have you ever been tempted to go down south?
No, I've not actually. No, I haven't. Again, that's because I think, you know, career and personal life are linked and things like that. I met my wife on the design course in Manchester when I first started in, you know, when we first came over to Manchester. My wife was on the course, and we got houses up here quite quickly, or you know, quite quickly, but we settled down here, and it was just never a conversation that we had, and never felt the need to do it. Never felt that we were missing out on anything by doing the move to London or whatever. Yeah, and I've always been really content. I've never looked beyond living here, to be honest with you. It's never, I've never gone, oh, should move back to Yorkshire, or I should do this. It's, I've always felt quite, you know, sort of fulfilled here, and you know, I feel at home here. I know people that have, you know, again, one of the guys, a guy called Ben Howarth, a really good mate. He was on the course at York and came to Manchester, and now he's set up an agency in London. Initially, he was at the Beautiful Meme, and he's set up an agency called Soft Power now with another guy, and like amazing work, really good. And he moved down south, and he's never looked back, and his family has settled and things down, you know, down there. But it's just never personally been for me, and I've never even, you know, I've never really given it a second thought.
No, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
I think Manchester's it's got its own thing though, hasn't it, really? I don't think you need to be going down south to kind of build an a really nice career in design, do you anymore?
No, absolutely not. No, absolutely not.
Touching on your time in education again, do you have any sort of standout memories or, people, lectures and things that sort of began to shape your own individual kind of approach to design going forward?
Yeah, again, I was thinking about it. I mean, in terms of sort of tutors, the first one that comes to mind was you know, one that really was a pillar when you think back, was like back at school. We it was funny, the school wasn't the best school I ever went, you know, I went to. Half of it was burned down by a student smoking in bogs, true story. So I spent half of my sort of like school life being taught in porter cabins. But there was randomly, for whatever reason, there was investment into like an art and design department at the school, which was like brand spanking new, you know, everything you wanted there from, you know, like CNC machines and all that business, right the way through to a real focus on sort of graphic design. And there was a guy called Mr. Hamilton, Richard Hamilton, who, you know, year 11, year 10, it was totally formative when I look back, and I've still got the final pig, you know, made a board game and all that. It was really formative, and it was really supportive. And that sticks. And then, you know, there are other tutors, there are other people from York that naturally stand out. But I think the people, when I went to York and met, you know, a couple of guys, as I say, that are mates to this day, I think that was quite formative, because you felt like, all right, we're all of the same mentality here. Personally, work-wise, we all like the similar things, you know, and we're living together and we're doing the social thing together, and we're actually cracking on with a bit of work and all that as well. And that felt all right, actually. When I said earlier that I started in York and then decided to sort of stretch out into Manchester, actually it was a really good decision, because we didn't just jump straight into a job. We actually had a bit of time to, all right, where do we want to go and what do we want to do? I'm speaking collectively, but actually, that was how I felt.
So, yeah, looking at sort of in a similar vein, but not really, looking at sort of your body of work and sort of ensembles, to a degree I'll touch on later as well, there's sort of a real experimental feel to it almost, with like a big emphasis on nice typography and things. Was this sort of, is that a sort of, an analysis that sort of rings true to yourself? And if it is, did this sort of thing begin to sort of build during your formative years at sort of college and university and things?
Yeah, it definitely did, and massively influenced and still influenced by those early people that I looked up to. And as you get a bit older, it becomes more distant and you start to have your own voice and opinion and stuff. But I'm probably the first to admit that it's the same guys, you know. It was Design Republic, you know. Yeah. How are they doing that and getting away with that? And how can they be so progressive and ingrained in sort of popular culture and all that sort of thing? You know, like fascinating, and fascinated by them. And you know, again, lucky enough to know one or two people that were there at that time now, Carson and things, and Julian House as well. And I remember at college just ripping. There's an album called Exterminator by Primal Scream that was like very much of the moment. It was, you know, there was a war happening in Iraq, and this album was it's very much, it felt very much amphetamine driven and all that sort of thing. And the album sleeve was brutalist in the videos, and I just remember just ripping that wholesale, you know, as you do. but that sort of mentality of how you can go about things stuck, and then you start to try and find your own voice and try and do things your own way. But the mentality of, oh, you can get away with it, I guess.
Yeah.
Sort of stuck right away through from the educational side of things. I mean, latter influences, you know, sort of music plays a big part and things like that. Sort of Funkadelic and the record sleeves of that, and sort of like bad acid, you know, bad acid trips and things like that. I'm always sort of thinking of these things, and it's I don't know how it feeds into the work. Some people do see us work as experimental, and I think I don't necessarily. I think partly that's down to the perception that we maybe put out as an agency, or people, you know, the stuff that we decide to share. And maybe that isn't the sort of fuller picture of working with councils on strategy things and naming and things like that. And it's hard, you know, you flick through Insta and it feels quite black and white and brutalist and maybe masculine and things like that. But I don't see it as necessarily as progressive, but it's maybe the idea of like, we've been asked before, how do you get away with that for a client? And I don't know. I think once you do some, I did a lot of personal stuff. and again, me speaking personally, I did a lot of sort of personal stuff and experimental stuff. And then a couple of clients when we were just before Ensemble started, one being Colony, said, "Oh, I like that collagey stuff and whatever it was that you were doing. Can you do that for us?" And then as soon it turned that then naturally turned into a commercially viable commercial project. It was like, all right, well, now we do. I'm not messing about and doing things for my own pleasure. I'm actually, we're doing it to a brief. And then other people saw that work that we did, and and all of a sudden it starts to be okay. You maybe attract people that resonate with the things that you do. Try not to have a house style. But it is the same fingerprints that are on things, and it is the same brain that's sort of collective brain, whatever, it's coming up with this sort of thing. So it does feel quite cyclical. Quite often we get clients coming and going, "I saw that what you did for those. Can we have that?" And you've then got to go through a process of going, "Well, you can have your version of that. You can have a mentality of that if you wanted to be a bit more, I don't know, progressive or whatever within your world, but you can't have that because that was right for those." So I don't know if that answers your question. I went
No, it does. I think it does.
ramble on there a little bit, but
That is good. On your own site where you do the kind of your prints and things, I don't know if it runs anymore because I think on your LinkedIn it's got like an end date to it, but some of the prints you're looking at that sort of really mundane things almost, but putting them in like a new light almost. Like there's one like plug sockets, isn't there? So a little bit of floaty balloons. I did a project a couple of years ago where I did a poster every day for a year, right? And I turned it into a book at the end, and I've ripped that poster off, the balloon poster, not even knowing it was you. I found it online somewhere and then I ripped it off my own thing.
Sorry.
It's all right. No,
Not
but I really
new
liked it,
ideas. I've done my share of ripping in the time.
but I don't know how to frame the question, but it's sort of where does that interest sort of come from? Sort of looking at like a plug socket and then saying, I'm going to make a poster of it, that sort of thing.
I've got kids now, so I get less time to do it. But there was sort of a time where it felt there were like it were quite I had time really, and it felt quite like there was sort of a bit of an abundance of ideas. Some of them shy, some of them all right, some of them never realized, whatever. So there was like, yeah, there was like, interested in sort of vector work in layman's terms, and all those sort of like, how can you boil something, how can you get something over as a point and boil it right down and not overwork it? So like the stuff like the balloons and stuff like that, it was just messing with form, the idea that all right, these balloons float to the top of the, but just sort of vector work, I guess, and stuff like that, like quite mundane things. And there's a point on scale actually, which I'll maybe get back around to. And then there's stuff like the collagey stuff as well. So that was like, again, coming back to the idea of it being quite psychedelic and quite like bad acid trips and things like that. A lot of it is just like maybe listening to music at the time or something's on, or you're like, all right, that'd look cool, or and then the other side is obviously like messing about with bits of type, which I guess which designer doesn't, but like does it, yeah. I do it less now. The only times I end up doing it now is like I do like letters, like in the similar sorts of vectory style for like mates as kids when they get bored, the initial letters. That's about as much as I do because I get to my head and say, well, you did it for my other kid. Can I have one of those? So, but I do less and less of that now, just because of sort of time and focus on this place and other, as I say, like family life and things like that. But, it is always of an interest, and that sort of vector side of it, which I guess it harps right back to that TDR thing, and that sort of world. And like say, you've got Neil McNeil behind you and all that, just having your take on it and then taking bits of other influence, all that.
It's interesting how kind of there's almost like I'm starting to find a lot of people that I talk to, they always have sort of the same sort of things in the Miu McNeil 8VO stuff, and they look at sort of Designers Republic and it's how it's sort of, I don't know, I guess shaped like a British culture almost, if that makes sense. And how it's sort of, you look at like Spin in London and how they, you can probably connect that right back down to that. And then I don't know where I'm going with that, but you kind of get what I mean.
No, it is, and you feel like a bit of a fraud by coming up with the same old things and all that sort of thing. But it just was relevant. I mean, I'm looking on your shelf there, like the Ray Gun and Fuse and those sort of things, and it was just yeah. And it is funny how those formative years when, you know, they were really prevalent in my formative years, and they're still relevant to me now. There is any other, you know, and not just because it's so timeless. Some of it isn't, probably. Like some of the TDR stuff is probably, they'd probably be the first to admit it was, some of it was a little bit of its time. Some of it is absolutely timeless, but like AVO, stuff like that, it's back to those early sort of, you know, Swiss design principles that allows it to just feel, you know, completely timeless. And like you say, Spinner really great at that.
So yeah, after graduation, you worked at an agency called Havas Links, and you were there for almost 10 years. Can you touch on sort of the first day, maybe stepping into the door in this kind of early time in your career?
I mean, Lynx really was just fundamental. I did spend a chunk of time there, and you know, looking back now, again, more friends I've met and are still regularly in contact with, you know, that I've met there. I graduated, and then I walked through the door on my graduation night, like with my dad in his tie and, you know, me in my shirt and tie and all that on your graduation night. And someone handed me a card from Lynx and said, "Oh, they've left this for you." And it was one of those. I went in for an interview. That was on the Friday. I went in for an interview on the Monday, and I think I got a job. So it was like, I just walked into that place. It was the first place that showed an interest, really, apart from one other internship. Yeah, I ended up being there nearly 10 years. I think that place, you know, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, really, that place. I love it, and I love the people there. And, you know, it is just, it keeps that links. I always sort of say it's like the mafia, like you never really get out of it. And we still do stuff to this very day for those guys. But I mean, walking through the door, it was up. I can see where the building is, where we are now. It's now a tower block, but it was an old sort of house, really, with like a rabbit warren. And there were only maybe 25 people that worked there. And, you know, when I left, it was like nearly 300. So it went through a massive transition of its own right. And that probably kept me there for that amount of time, really. But, you know, going from university and going into that place, Grant Mitchell, who I know you had a chat to a couple of weeks back, or I listened back to that. You know, Grant was there, and I love Grant, and he was great. Again, it's still someone I see and bump into, and I've got a lot of time for. He was there, and you know, there were a bunch of other people, and the work there was generally sort of 50% pharmaceutical healthcare work, and then 50% sort of culture, placemaking, a little bit of sport and things like that. And you know, Grant was really good at that time in terms of force, because he was Chase. He was like Chase, you know, ex-Chase, forcing ideas through. It's all about the idea and stuff, which was, you know, was a learning curve for me, because it was like, I can make things look great and all that. Well, not make things look great, I can make things look all right. Sometimes it can be devoid of an idea. But that, you know, that was the early part. And then it sort of all changed a little bit, really, when Grant and another creative director, Nick, left, and Trevor Johnson joined, who is now again a good mate. I see him regularly. I'm catching up with him tomorrow, actually. And he joined, and he just instilled a really different mentality into the studio. And he was all about design. It was all, you know, like from Grant, which was all like about the idea. And I'm not, you know, and Craft was absolutely there, don't get me wrong. Trevor came in, and he was just like, "Right, why are you using three type sizes?" And that was the first question. It wasn't about the broader picture of the idea. So he just instilled a really solid design mentality, and was like, "It's okay to go down that approach. It's okay to be to you know to he reinstilled Swiss principles, really." And it was, you know, and not only that, from a learning standpoint, being under him and learning that and going, "All right, you can do that." Because that's what I resonated to. You know, I liked Farrow and all that. He brought like an abundance of really interesting clients and things like that. Obviously, a lot of it, the sort of legacy of music, you know, within Manchester. That was sort of the early part, and that's what largely kept me there, because it was Lynx was on such a transition from 25 people to this sort of monster now that then got by Havas, that's 300 people. And you know, and I love that time. I think eventually it came to a natural conclusion, because I was sort of personally done with healthcare. You know, I started sort of questioning that a little bit. And I'm not saying, you know, each to their own. And I made a living out of it for 9 years. But yeah, I just wondered, you know, if it was time for something new. But as I say, the people there are, you know, they're in, it's all inherently linked. And
yeah. So yeah, after a few years, you would begin lecturing part time, I believe. How did that come about, sort of your foray into education?
Yeah, I mean, everything right the way through from, you know, college, uni, blah, it was all it's all really organically happened, you know. So like you do, you go through and you make contacts and things. So that happened. And it's how I met Martin, the other co-founder here, by teaching. So again, it just leads into that organic thing. But that was one of those where I'd sort of done at Links, and I had started to go freelance and things. And really, it was a girl that I knew there, again, that used to work at Links. It was a tutor, started tutoring at Shillington College. I said, oh, you should do it. It's part-time. And really, to my mind, back then, it was like, well, yeah, it's a regular income. It's two nights a week. You know, I can still do freelance in and around, but it just supplements that, you know, if you're in quiet periods or when you're sort of making that leap from agency to freelance or your own clients or whatever. So that was like the true decision. But, you know, I always liked mentoring students and things like that, and did that at the agency and sort of tried to lead that, you know, with internships and whatnot. And it is important. So yeah, it came about. It was, you know, I love chilling, and I'm a big advocate for it, or I was. I don't quite know what it is now or whatever. I think it's gone online and things like that. I think the pandemic dictated a certain way it went, but when they had sort of campuses across the world, I was a big advocate for it, and I loved it. And I learned a lot, and I liked the idea. I heard, you know, you were people in industry, because it's incestuous, up here going, oh, well, you know, Shilling, it's shit, or it's there's no degree out of it, or students are bollocks and things like that. And I just thought it's just not, I just didn't like that closed door club to it. It's like, who says you hold keys to this gig, you know, like, who, you know, this industry? It's like, we're in service industry, you know, we're in service industry. It's not some sort of precious art club that you allow in or out, allow people in or out of. So yeah, I like that side, and meeting different people on that course from wildly different cultures and backgrounds and reasons for being there as well, you know. So you had people that, you know, wanted the sort of traditional path of moving into, you know, learning the trade and moving into a design agency. You had people that had got very successful companies but wanted to pick up the branding side of things themselves. You had people that, you know, had maybe missed the calling but worked in marketing and wanted to retrain, or, you know, a vastly wild sort of selection of people. And yeah, as I say, I learned a lot, you know, I learned a lot about, you know, the creative process, I guess, but also, you know, about presenting and articulating ideas and giving feedback in the right way and things like that. So yeah. And as I say, it was just a Monday, Tuesday part-time thing, really, this, you know, like an intensive course sort of thing. But yeah, I really enjoyed it.
There was a question that I had at the end that I'll sort of pull up, just makes more sense of it now. But obviously, I assume you've looked at a lot of student portfolios and sort of interviewed students for your own agency and things. Is there sort of something that you look for when you look at students' work, sort of what makes a good portfolio, or even just a person that you want to interview and sort of bring on for yourself?
I mean, the very first thing you look for, and you can't get this across on a website or a PDF or whatever, is you look for the right level of enthusiasm from a person. That's what you ask. That's what you want first and foremost. Mm-hmm. Can I work with this person for 40 hours a week, whatever it is? You know, have they got the right enthusiasm and attitude to it? And it's all basic sort of stuff, but that's at the very core of it. And then you can go from there and, you know, how receptive are they to feedback? How willing, you know, are they to learn? Can I learn from those guys as well? You know, and all that. I think on a real base level, because as you say, we have seen a lot of folios and, you know, put a couple of job submissions and job posts out there and things like that. We have had an abundance of folios back as ensemble. And there's an abundance of advice as well that you're going to get. But my being absolutely blunt, my sifting through 200 portfolios and trying to whittle them down, you do give each one time because they've sent them in. But from looking at the CV alone, whether it's right. And I don't mean the words that are on there. I mean the layout of it. And it sounds such a silly thing, but you can flick through and you can discount, well, X amount because the CV is not laid out properly. And it's, dealing in communication, and that's before you get to ideas and all that sort of thing. You're dealing in communication. It's like, what are the type choices? What's the type saying, how are they structuring that information and content and things like that? Considering that there's a brief to it, it's your own personal brand or whatever. There's a little bit of content on there. It's like, well, how are you formatting that and putting that information down? As long as bar charts and things like that on CV, so you can almost discount quite a lot already with that. So it's quite brutal, but that's true. In terms of the portfolio themselves, you're never looking for the finished article. It's always just that, is there a spark of something there? And it might be something beautifully executed or a brilliant idea or an ideal world. Both of those things come together. But that's maybe asking too much. And I think we're all on the search for that, beautiful idea, amazingly executed thing. But it's always that, is there a germ in there? Has this person got something to say? Have they got an opinion on something? What is their take on it? Have they gone the extra mile in showing how a project can maybe be realized in different ways and go off in different streams of approach? But it does come back down to the have they got the right attitude? They could have the best follower in the world, but if they're not willing to learn or take it on, I think they've learned it all already, then it's not going to work out because I don't feel like that. I'm constantly learning whatever. And if someone puts like a 9 out of 10 on Illustrator on the CV, then Jesus, man, they must be good because like I've done it 40 hours a week for 20 years or a 9. So, yeah.
It's an interesting thing with CVs because I had a crap. I just had a Word document that I sent places, and it was crap. And I was like, do you know what I mean? And it's just like,
We've had some through. We've gone, is this is this post-ironic? Like you've got Virgil blowing back. He's like, is this some post-ironic genius thing about sending the CV in a spreadsheet? And I just don't get it. Like sort of anti thing, anti design, whatever. Like maybe maybe it's me that's out of touch. And then you're like, when you can't decide whether someone's like being post-ironic or not, you sort of feel.
I think for me personally, it was always just a thing of I'd done my portfolio website and I'd made that all spick and span, and then I got to the CV and I was like, I just can't be arsed. I just can't be arsed. I've done all the work there. It's like the link's in it. Just click the link, please click the link, because then it'll be
Well, if it were a functional thing, I sort of get that. If you deal with function now a little bit, but yeah.
I've gone back since on that, redone it and tried to make it
Good.
look all nice and that. I promise, I promise. So this is kind of the midpoint of the show that I do with everyone. And I call it the Hall of Fame, and it's sort of ripping off Desert Island Discs, but not at the same time. It kind of is, but it's just the idea that if you could pick one thing that you think has been sort of your sort of heartbeat of your own career, be it kind of a person, a film, a piece of artwork, a book, a song, whatever you want it to be, what do you think that would be for yourself?
I was thinking about this actually, and I was going to go try and be really smart and existential and all that sort of thing. But the one thing that sort of ties obviously interests together, but being like the sort of visual culture, so art and design, art to a large extent, music, and sort of wraps that up in an era that I really, that I resonate towards is spiritualized, ladies and gentlemen, we are floating in space as an artifact. So the music is it's a great album. The music sort of like melodic and dark and spiritual and distant and that sort of thing. And it's wrapped by a in a sleeve by Pharoah, which is just brilliant. So it ties into the stuff that I was doing at the time at Lynx and stuff like pharmaceutical packaging. Wasn't doing pharmaceutical packaging, but it was in the healthcare world. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's it was designed faithfully, so it just replicates a pillbox essentially, but it was done
Oh,
really,
yeah.
really faithfully and single-mindedly. So it was created, it was fulfilled, it was packaged together in a pharmaceutical factory. There's an amazing picture where everyone's still wearing face masks, and it was just done in such a single-minded way. It was, the CD was in a blister wrapper. I've still got one, I think, upstairs. It's like unopened and stuff. And it just really resonates. And it was just like, yeah, I like the faithfulness and the single-mindedness of how that is brought together, along with the music and along with the theme as well. That's something that, beyond sort of going to family or friends or whatever it is, I think, oh, that's and not being too clever, that single art fact, I think, yeah, it really sticks with me, actually.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. They did like I think Farrow did something with it recently where it was like an anniversary or something, so they reprinted it.
Yes.
But yeah, even I saw that and I was like, that's quality, that. I don't know what it is. It's just sometimes you get an idea, don't you? And it's like, it's just mad, isn't it? The way, how have you done that? How have you got to that point where you're like, I'll just put a fucking pill packaging on it and it like works, it just works, you know what I mean?
Yeah, completely. It's
Yeah.
the way that it's sort of faithfully done.
Yeah.
So the sleeve notes are on this little on the wrap. Like the prescribing information and stuff. It's just
Yeah.
like it's just really smart.
Yeah.
So as I say, as a piece of graphic design.
So yeah, after your stint in teaching, you would found your now creative practice ensemble, along with your co-founder Martin James Power. Could you touch on the experience of sort of starting your own agency? And is there any advice you'd sort of go back and give yourself or give someone else that would ask you if you had any?
Yeah, it felt like the natural step for us. So again, it happened really organically. I met Martin through teaching. He was teaching a different couple of nights at Shillington, and we got introduced in a hotel room at some after Shillington gig, which is as a bit dodgy as it sounds. And yeah, I mean, that was all really coincidental. I'd moved to sort of outskirts of Manchester. He'd moved to the same place. He'd just moved up from London. We were both having kids at the same time, which are the both, we can't get away from each other now. They're both in the same school and we're on the school run and all that together. But yeah, we were both sort of that working from bedrooms or whatever it was, sort of freelancing and working for his own clients and things like that. And we were just like, oh, let's get a space together. So we got a little shoebox in sort of other end of town, but cheapest rent in town. Masking tape, windows, and all that stuff. I got another couple of guys sort of in with us at the same time, doing their own things, an animator and a developer and whatnot. And yeah, we slowly realized actually things resonate, and we've got sort of complementary skills, but different skill sets at the same time. And we're both at a very similar place in terms of career, in terms of like the clients and the amount of work and stuff. And it was just one of those. I think one day we moved spaces to a slightly bigger space, and it was like, that's the day where everything pulls. And then you start working out the logistics, and it's just like getting a mortgage. It was just like step by step. All right, what do we, what, how do we bring everything together? And just sort of worked through it, and very slowly started to grow. So it was very much dipping a toe in to see if it worked, and from there sort of grew. We were fortunate that we had contacts at quite a reasonably, yeah, very big places, but not necessarily saying the jobs were big, but like Nokia and IKEA, and I had a lot like locally, so like Manchester Central and a couple of other contacts. And yeah, we just pulled, and I think the even the name Ensemble, it came about just because, being truthful, Martin had it kicking about, he had the domain kicking about. It was like we were putting a proposal together one day just before we'd formalized it, and it was like, oh, go under Ensemble, you've got that name and you've got the web domain. And then yeah, he when I say organic, it really was, and things stuck. And then we just, as I say, there was a line in the sand drawn one day, and we pulled, and ever since then we've sort of tried to sort of slowly grow. We've never wanted to be a you know, a huge 20-person agency or whatever. We think there's a, you know, there's a right balance in terms of people, that we amount of people and skill sets, and get that spectrum right, which we're working to. But yeah, the sort of complementary skills were really good. Mine was always quite, you know, very good on the sort of strategy side of things, as well as a creative. And I was always, I was always personally more on creative led. I never articulated the strategy thing. I was made that leap in my head and presumed people would get it. But So yeah, a lot of complementary skills there. I think it's been very beneficial that there's been two people to work through this with, much like a sort of a marriage where you can sort of riff off each other or whatever. There's a couple of people that I know that have got agencies on their own, and I think it quite genuinely is tough at the top, and you know, you need a sort of a close circle around you if you are at the top on your own to sort of riff ideas off and things like that. There's so many examples you could give, you know, in terms of, I don't know, charging or whatever, that if you'd have been sat on your own, it'd have been a different number to, you know, actually working it through. And, well, no, actually, it should be this. And, you know, so that really, you know, that really works. But just, you know, even us just going back to the studio as it is now, the first couple of people that got involved were Shilling students. You know, the first two people we employed were Shilling students, and you know, which is probably a testament to what we thought all that cost. But yeah, that's an aside.
So I was going to ask you about sort of saying the experimental thing, but you kind of touched on it earlier. So I was going to ask instead, do you have kind of, when you get a brief from a client, do you have a set way of going about getting to the end result with that brief? What does kind of the creative process look like for yourself?
Yeah, we do. We've got a bit of a formula. It's more of an articulation of probably what you consider a normal process for a client to understand. I think you quickly find out that a client doesn't speak the same language as you. When you can go into a presentation and say this, they'll, you know, you start speaking a different language. So we have got a process that we go through with a client. I won't give you the sort of sales pitch with it, but it's sort of like three or four processes of, like, you know, decipher, unearthing, and all that sort of thing, discovery and design and then deploy and stuff. So yeah, everyone's got these or whatever these trademarks after their process. And it's not as sort of formulaic as that. It depends on the sort of scale of the project or the type of the project, type of client, budget involved and things like that. But I was saying the other day, actually, we're in a really good place in that we're fortunate that we're really busy and we've got a lot of different clients. So we're one of those agencies where we don't do big, you know, 2, 3, 4 big projects a year. It's like we've got a lot of different clients, and with that becomes its own challenges, because you've got 16 different clients to sort of service and remember and pick up and put down and things like that. But I think we really like that because of the variation in it. The clients we work with, and it comes back to that idea of, like, how do you get away with what you get away with? Like, we're doing some amazing thing, but how do you get away with doing what you're doing? And I don't mean that in, like, we're a, you know, amazing sort of place, but the clients are all really good, and you can be really natural with them, and you can be really yourselves with them. It's not one of those, like, you know, asshole relationships where a client pays you to be a prick, you know what I mean? So they can be a prick with you. Actually, everyone that we work with is really good, and get the most out of us, and we get the most out of the client and things like that. So there is a process. And, you know, you try and just build relationships with clients. You don't want to hard stop at the end of a project. You want it to sort of lead on and grow with them and all that sort of thing. So really it is all about sort of that relationship building, I think.
So I ask everybody kind of a similar thing at the end, which is, again, kind of cliche. But if you go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice when you first started your career, knowing what you know now, what do you think that would be?
I haven't got regrets in what I've done. You know, I think I probably overstayed my welcome. No, not overstayed. I stayed longer than I should have done at Links and things like that. And there are a few not wrong moves, but, like, everything I've done is, you know, I'm relatively happy with. And I think it comes back, it comes to that really, that time, the advice being dot dot dot, time will probably sort it all out for you. You don't, it sounds so obvious and maybe, you know, sort of so grandiose, but there was a rush, or I felt there was a need to scramble to the top and all that sort of thing when I was like first setting out, without, you know, understanding the role of design within the context of not only the agency that I was working with and the other cogs, you know, the other cogs that were moving at the same time, but understand design from a client's perspective and how that fits into their business needs and stuff like that. So you can design a nice application and go, oh, well, I think this is great, and then see your ass when, you know, it's rejected or whatever. And I think time sorts all that out as well. You get around a picture with it, you know, just as everything. You fail, you learn, you know, you take a step on and all that. So I think, yeah, not trying to rush to job title or this or that. It's like, if you do things right and you soak things up, everything else, you know, and you work hard and do all that, everything should take care of itself, really, you know. And just as long as you make informed decisions as you go along, and this decision feels right at the time, all right, you know, then you sort of should be all right, really. That's what it comes down to. I think, to wrap up, I started by saying, like, you know, personal and family life and design and all that sort of thing, it is all weirdly interconnected. And I suppose it's no different to other people, but someone came into university when I was there 20 odd years ago, and I did a magazine for him, a guy called Dave, and he wanted someone to do a magazine for him. And 20 years on, I'm now doing, we're doing something for his mum, who owns a bunch of properties and things like that, and she's still linked. You know, my wife was on the course. Trevor Johnson, who's again a good mate, he's, you know, he met him at Lynx, and now, you know, we're working on things together. And I think as long as, you know, you keep hold of those relationships as you go through it, you know, you keep fail, learn, and all that sort of thing, it'll work itself out.
No, that's quality. It's a lovely way to wrap up, I think, kind of connecting the two ends.
Yeah, only intentional.
And then, yeah, super, super lastly, where can people find yourself online?
Yes, so you better go into Ensemble, really, which is weareensemble.co.uk, which there's not a lot on there. We've got Instagram, which is, I think, ensemble_snaps, and then Behance, which has got a bit more sort of case study stuff on, actually, which we use as there's a bit more of a case study platform, which is, I think it's behance.net/ensemble design. I just you'll find it something like that.
No, that's fine,
there you go. Yeah, there's nothing, I post bits and pieces on Insta, but nothing overly interesting. Depends how many beers, if I post anything, but yeah, that's where you'll find us.
No, that's it then. Cheers.
Great stuff.
Hello again. Yep, as ever, if you want to find myself online, I'm Pirated Material everywhere. Website is piratedmaterial.co.uk. I'm on everywhere you can find me, really. yeah, hope you enjoyed. As I said, I never quite know how to end these. I mean, sort of, it becomes really awkward as I'm recording it. But yeah, I'll speak at you next time.